This podcast is part of the GWC Network. For more information on it or to check out some of our other awesome podcasts, visit us at galacticwatercooler.com. After the tone, enjoy the show.
This is Modern Geek, podcast number 24, recorded January 8th, 2012. I'm Chuck.
I'm Juan.
Welcome back to Modern Geek. Bonus!
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 Yes, we had so much content and a good number of voicemails that we decided to once again split the podcast into two and stretch it out a little bit further.
Here. Love it. Love it.
Indeed. You know, I did want to start off talking about something that is kind of a bit of a guilty admission for me.
Oh, yeah?
I've never been that much of a fan of an outsider's fan of the motion control games.
Right.
No, I never really considered getting a Nintendo Wii, and the PS3 Move doesn't really interest me. My parents at Christmas took advantage of a Boxing Day deal and got a Xbox 360 with the Kinect.
Nice.
They got a great. It was like $200 or something like that.
Wow.
For both. Yeah, it's the 4 gig version, but I mean,
they're
not playing any Xbox classic games anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So. Yesterday, in the kind of early afternoon, I was in the middle of doing some cleaning around the house, and I found an HDMI cable that I told him I'd bring up there to help him set it up. And I said, okay, well, I'm really busy here. I can come help set it up, and I can't really stay for dinner. I'll come set it up, and then we'll I'll take off and go, when I get cleaning, I got to keep going. Otherwise, I lose my cleaning streak, and then my house is filthy. So, I went up there at around 2 o'clock and did an hour's worth of wiring, remote reset, setting up Xbox Live accounts for them, all that kind of stuff, helping them customize their avatars,
nice.
All that kind of stuff. Get them all set up, and they pop in the game that comes with it. What is it? Kinect Adventures. Huh. Is the game that it comes with. I'm like, oh, whatever. I don't know. It's that thing where you balance the raft and, jump over an obstacle course and, play this kind of weird version of one-sided volleyball or something like that. And 5 hours later, we're all beat from playing it so much. And it is addictive. I don't know. It's like, I would never let anybody see the little snapshots it takes while you're playing the game because that's just embarrassing. But I don't know. I think this is, I can see why Xbox and Kinect has started to knock down the competition in terms of playability, because it's amazing how well it tracks, even two people. And my parents have a relatively large living room, so it worked really well for, me and my stepdad, two relatively large people playing these kind of big, hand-waggling games where, like stretching out and at some points we're like knocking the ceiling tiles off.
Nice.
At least they got a lowered ceiling or whatever, so it's a lot of fun. Just wanted to bring that up. It's interesting. I never thought I would be one to like that. I don't think I would play it by myself, and I can't play it in here because I've got a solid ceiling that's too low, and I can barely fit my furniture in here. But it's kind of a cool party game.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check. I've played some, but I haven't played near enough to like really get into it. I need to get off my ass.
One thing that was really cool that I noticed was I was also playing with the Kinect swipe motions in the menu.
Yeah.
360, that's cool. I don't think it's practical.
Oh, really?
Like, I mean, I'm used to the controller, so I just, go over Netflix, right?
Right.
I can just quickly flick through the menu. It's not, and even using the Harmony remote or something like that, it's still more practical to use it that way.
Right.
But, there were a number of times where I was having to go back and forth between different menus, or I could just go Xbox settings and it would just, you know, go over to that menu. I'm like, okay, then I go down with the controller from there. So, you know, it's kind of cool. I still don't think I could fit one in my place, but I'm starting to change my tune on that one.
I love that. You know, and it happens to all of us so often, you know?
Oh, exactly. It's like you make these assumptions based on kind of previous, I like playing with a controller, and then you're cut to hours later where you're like leaping to jump over an obstacle course that's not even, you know, a real obstacle course. It's a great workout too, apparently.
Well, I have kind of a similar sort of story. This week, yeah. You know, and we've got some flack for having a lot of iOS devices. I mean, I have an iPad and an iPhone, and you have an iPhone, and you have 6 iPhones. not on purpose, you know, but you do.
It just happens. You know, you wash one and you have to get another. Yeah, it just happens.
So, yeah, I have been, in general, I've been going to the gym quite a bit for the last, I guess, 2 years, you know?
Oh, really?
And, well, it just, you know, it's a new thing for me. For the most part, I haven't taken music with me. Now, for cardio, I take video with me. I use my iPhone. I put it on the thing in front of me, and I watch video. Without video, I would not do cardio. I'll just be clear about that.
Right.
Yeah, audio, not enough for me. I would be bored. Music, podcast, whatever.
Yeah, you just sit there staring at the numbers on the LCD on the treadmill.
Please,
or something like that. It's like,
stop.
No, yeah. You can't do that. It's just bad.
I'm with you. Yeah, it's got to be. So I had that. So essentially, I had my iPhone with me at the gym. But during strength sessions, or, you know, when I'm you know, on a machine or lift or in free weight area, my phone stayed in my bag, you know?
Okay.
And I would get it out between sets to record what I was doing, or to, you know, if I had a long break between sets to read Twitter or something. But it stayed in the bag, and then it came out when I could put it on the treadmill. I depended on the gym for music. Well, two reasons, I guess. One is that I was dumb, and two, I was a cheap bastard, you know. Both pretty widely known, I think. About a couple weeks ago, I, you know, for the umpteenth time, I was in the gym, and a cool tune came on, and I realized that I could lift more when a cool tune came on, you know?
It's not the Rocky song, right?
No, it wasn't. It was AC/DC, actually. And
That works. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm like, you're just like, oh, yeah, and it just, you're stronger, and you're like, wow, man, this is good, you know? But so I started thinking, maybe I need some music, and Audra's like, duh, you know, I've been telling
as Audra's like rocking. Oh, yeah.
I've been telling you that for years, you know? That combined with the fact that I had some Amazon gift card money from, some very kind GWCers and from some various, people and family and so on for Christmas and birthday, I had some money. I thought, you know, I should go and get me a player. And something small, you know, one of the itty bitty ones that I can wear and it'll be great. So my first thought, of course, was to look at the new Nano, which is, the Nano has always been the gym iPod. I mean, really, it's designed to be a gym iPod.
Or with the latest rendition, a watch.
Yeah. And it looks really cool. And I thought, well, okay, that's sweet. I'll check it out. And normally I would be way too cheap to pay, you know, $150 for a device like that. But I had gift card money. So it's Monopoly money. I thought, you know, hey, maybe I'll spend it on that. You're supposed to spend it on something that you wouldn't normally buy anyway, you know, that's fun and useful to you.
That's why I bought my PS3 at Christmas.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So I start looking.
Pay bills.
Then I start doing the research that you and I or anybody would always do, you know?
Yeah.
And first thing I do is I go read some Amazon reviews. Now, we should write a book on reading Amazon reviews for technology, because there's some useful information in Amazon reviews. There's also a lot of crap in Amazon reviews.
Yeah. It's, you really got to pick and choose which ones you're looking at.
Right. There are bad reviews for everything. I mean, and there were
every single piece of technology on Amazon has a 1-star review that says it doesn't work. It's a broken piece of technology.
Well, and there are also ones that are, you know, every shade of gray in between. Like, my favorite was the one for the, you know, for the, the Nano that said, it is really, be careful, it's really sensitive to liquid, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense. That's important to know. I'm going to sweat, you know, this is a problem. And he's like, it's so stupid. I mean, it must have got a tiny amount of water on it when my basement flooded.
When your basement flooded.
Wait a minute.
It wasn't waterproof to 10 meters. What's going on here?
I must have accidentally splashed a drop of water on it when it was submerged for a week, you know? Okay, come on. So there was a lot of that. And once I plowed through and kind of filtered some of those out and let it sit for a little bit, which is also something I would advise, you know, when you read a bunch of Amazon reviews, just forget about it for a day. Because you got to let them sink in a little, because you'll be down on everything, you know? Yeah. I came back and I realized there are some really valid points here. And I went and played with one, and then I agreed with a lot of them. Like, for example, there are very few hardware buttons on the Nano.
Right. Okay.
The vast majority of functionality, including starting music, stopping music, pausing music, changing songs, has to be done via the touchscreen.
Or the, or I guess if you have the compatible headphones with the remote thing, right?
You can start and stop. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, but the vast majority of things that you're going to do with it require require you to actually use the touchscreen.
So if you're doing your cardio outside while jogging through the Canadian winter and you have gloves on, not be the ideal option for you.
Or if you have sweaty hands in the gym.
Sweaty hands. Oh, right.
Or
yeah,
sweaty screen.
Because the conductivity gets all effed up. And
If you've ever tiny bit of water, like you wash your hands and then go to use your iPhone and there's a little, your finger's a little damp, it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
Also, I understand that the screen doesn't auto-orient it. You have to orient it to use it.
So it doesn't have that accelerometer to balance it back out. Okay.
The latest one has one, and I don't know if it does or not, but that's an issue.
Okay.
There were quite a few comments about broken screens. Now, I'm pretty careful with gear, but I feel like at the gym, it's a possibility. You know, this thing could get dropped.
Well, and see, that's the counter to the first argument that I always have against getting a smaller MP3 player, which is, well, I've got my iPhone. Why should I need another player? Until the first time I was running on the treadmill and I pulled my headphone cable and the iPhone went slam down onto the track and went flying back behind me.
If you're lucky and you don't step on it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I managed to, you know, like horses in a charge, avoid it slightly. And Yeah. Well, less than gracefully fell off the back of the treadmill and caught the
with you. Yep. Exactly. And I've kind of come to the conclusion that I can handle it on the treadmill because it's worth it.
Right.
But I'm a little concerned. First of all, the iPhone is large. I don't really like wearing the iPhone. It's pretty big, and I know a lot of people strap it on the
pretty big armband, though.
Yeah, a lot of people strap it on the arm. That is definitely the best thing to do with it if you're going to wear it. But damn, it's just a little big for that. I don't really want to wear an armband like that.
It's like one of those transport inhibitors from Star Trek: The Next Generation.
It kind of is, actually. I wear a body bug anyway, so I already feel kind of low-jacked. I don't really want to wear other crap, you know?
Wear all the armbands.
I know, it's like, come on. And add to this the fact that it's heavy. I don't know. And you know, again, no hardware buttons, so you're essentially going to have to play with the screen.
Go back to that, though. The heavy is a very valid concern, especially when you're trying to do exercises and stuff, and you generally probably don't want to have one of your arms dragged down by something quite as large as an iPhone. It is relatively heavy,
I guess, compared to what you're lifting, it's not. But it's sort of
I know, but, you know.
It's still kind of like, I don't know, it's chunky, I guess, is more like it. It's
yeah, weight awkward.
Exactly. Weight in a place you don't want it.
That's what I meant. Yeah,
exactly. And it's expensive, as you pointed out, which if you break it, it's an issue, you know? So I started thinking, okay, maybe the Nano's not the right solution for me. So, you know, thinking I do have my music in iTunes and it would be easy to be able to move it. I'm thinking maybe a Shuffle would be good. Shuffle is very inexpensive. You know, you can get a Shuffle for $40 now. So it's kind of like, what the hell? And of course, the shuffle, the beautiful thing, Audra has one. It's tiny. I mean, like literally the clip is as big as it is, and you could clip it anywhere. A lot of women at the gym clip it to a bra strap.
Right.
You know, or a pocket or the back. Sean used to clip his, the back of his shirt sometimes. I mean, they are tiny. The bad news is that they have no screen, no indicator at all. The only way you can select things is to just know what order they're in.
Or what is there? I think there's a slider for shuffle mode or something.
Yeah, it generally is. Only in the recent ones, you can do other things. Audra keeps her stuff in an order that she knows.
Right. Okay. So she got like a workout playlist.
Yeah. Or exactly in an order she can, you know, chunk through and find something if she wants to. That's a little bit too far for me. I'm too controlling. I want to pick what the whole point of doing this was so I could pick what I listen to, you know?
Yeah.
And so on, I'm thinking, okay, it looks like Apple doesn't have a solution for me here. I'm going to have to go look. So I start looking around. And at this point, I realize that the gym is kind of a weird situation. And maybe I should look for what people are saying about that. And I did. And I found a number of recommendations for SanDisk's Sansa Clip, which is a very small player.
Okay.
It's not as pretty as the shuffle. It's a little bit larger. In the pictures, again, it looks much larger than it is, which is a good thing in this point.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It looks relatively
Tiny.
Bulged out. Yeah.
It's about an inch and a half long. 2 inches.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay. The picture does not do it justice then.
Yeah, it's like it's a little bit chunkier than a shuffle.
Right. Okay.
That screen is an inch in diagonal. So it's maybe a
postage stamp size.
Smaller.
It's smaller than
a postage stamp.
It's smaller, yeah.
Which is awesome. I got to tell you, I am a big fan. I took it to the gym for the first time today.
Okay.
I ordered it via Amazon, and I got it end of, I think, Friday it came in, and I didn't have time to take it with me. So first time I got to take it with me was today. And, man, okay, the clip is the full size of it again, so it's not any bigger.
Oh, it has a clip on the back?
Okay. Yeah, the whole back of it is a clip. It's that small.
Oh, like the shuffle. Okay.
Exactly like the shuffle. And that screen is absolutely just big enough. Like, literally, it actually shows album art on it, which is kind of neat. People are mad because it doesn't, and I have actually the Clip Zip, which is the newest version of it, if you're not looking at that, because there's a clip
yeah,
plus.
I'm looking, it looks like Sansa Clip Zip. It comes in 4 gig and 8 gig models.
Exactly. And so it's funny too, a lot of the reviews complain about things like the fact that it doesn't have a counter for the time remaining. It just has a little bar that a little dot crawls across. I don't really care to see exactly how many seconds are left in a screen that I'm not going to look at while I'm working out anyway.
Well, that's the thing. In this context, it doesn't matter.
It's pointless. Yeah, exactly. You can see approximately how far through the song you are if you care about that.
Right.
But you can build it says no playlist. Not true. It has a go list, which is essentially like, what do they call it on the iPod? It's like you can add something to the existing list on the fly. I can't remember. There's a name for it, but yeah.
But smart playlists.
Yeah, something like that. No, anyway, there's a way that you can say, I'm listening to something, cue this next thing up behind it in an instant list. It has one like that.
Oh, okay. I know what you mean, and I have no idea what it's called.
It's called a go list, and you can do that. I think you can use the software on the PC to create additional ones, but I'm not going to bother with that.
Right.
It's just a USB drive. You dump your crap on it. It plays it. I like that. It does ignore your folders and everything, so it's handy to put stuff on in folders for management, but it uses the ID3 data. Go ahead.
So when you plug it in, it just shows up as like a USB drive?
Yep.
And nice.
You dump your stuff on it, and then it reads it takes a second whenever you unplug it says indexing, and it runs through and pulls the data out of the file, and then it organizes by artist and album and stuff based on the data. So your menu, your little menu that you run through lets you look at albums and so on, and you can play an album or you can go to a particular artist. It will shuffle, as you would expect. Surprisingly good. The little display is cool. I mean, it's not awesome. It's like kind of chunky and pixely, but I look at it as like not like a bad screen, but rather enough screen in a place where I didn't think I was going to get one, you know?
Right.
So the little menus are really kind of ugly and dirt simple, which is great because
it's function over form at that point. It's like, this is exactly what you're needing it to do.
Yes. And you probably noticed the price, you know, I paid, I think $53 for mine.
And was that the four or the eight? The eight. Okay. I'm looking at the Canadian store, I guess. It's seven. The Canadian prices are 50 for the four and 70 for the eight, which is,
yeah, when I looked,
still, that's pretty damn good.
When I looked, it was 46 in the U.S. for the four and 53 for the eight. So I ordered the eight. I don't really care about eight. To be honest, I'm not one of these people that expects to carry, like, now, I don't know if you noticed yet, but it has a micro SD slot on it.
I was about to say, it's got an expanded memory slot. It's got a great compatibility list on it. It's got AAC, which is DRM-free iTunes, MP3, WMA, Secure WMA, Ogg Vorbis, which is great, and FLAC.
It'll play damn near anything.
That's pretty damn good. The only thing out of that that's missing is Apple Lossless, and there's only a very small subset of us that actually use that, so that's pretty slick.
Yep. And so you could actually put a 32 gig card in it if you care to. You could have 40 gig of music on it. I don't know why you'd want to. It'd be stupid. You could never find anything. Personally,
the battery down a little bit too.
Yeah, personally, I think that anything more than a couple of gig on a device like this is kind of pointless. You know, you're going to swap stuff in and out often enough and charge it often enough that who cares, you know?
Right.
But for $6, I went ahead and got the 8 gig because what the hell?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, why not? You know, if it had been $10 even, or I think I probably would have gotten the four, you know? But it was cheap enough. And I am really surprised. It is surprisingly good, easy to use. It does sound good. People had people who seem to be not jackasses on, you know, on Amazon commented that it had good sound. Does have an EQ that you can make some changes and save to. It has an FM tuner in it, which is, well, and you know, that's a big thing for the gym because a lot of mine doesn't, but a lot of gyms, have a bunch of TVs and each one will be on a different FM radio station.
So, oh, okay. That makes sense then.
Yeah. So wherever you are, you can just tune into one. I like it cause it's fun to listen to NPR sometimes, believe it or not. I'm kind of... and actually, the gym at the college that I go to has the FM station, so that could be
excellent.
Useful.
Yeah.
A lot of the various comments said that it doesn't do presets. It does. I don't know if that's a firmware update, because they do firmware updates for this thing pretty regularly. But it does. Either that or they just didn't read the manual, you know, because you can once you're on a station, if you hold a button down, you can set a preset for it. And then those presets show up on the menu. So when you go to FM tuner on the radio, it lists your presets right there. So seems That's easy to smart. Me. One of the cool things in the clip zip over the clip is that it has a stopwatch in it, which is really useful. Normally you wouldn't want to use that a lot because I have a watch that has all those, but inevitably you will eventually forget the watch. Which, you know, and you can use the clock in the place. It's not like the world's going to end if you rest, you know, 63 seconds instead of 60 or something. But,
yeah.
And I've used my iPhone, but I generally don't. I don't know why. It's just a pain in the ass to use the iPhone. You know, you're wearing this one. I tried it out. It does work. I used it today, actually, to keep track of, I had gone to the gym with someone else and I wanted to be there about an hour. So I started it, you know, and you can use it without interrupting the music. So I started it and then just went about my business. And every so often I wondered, how long have I been here? I don't remember when I got here, you know, and I looked and I could see. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I highly recommend so far. We'll see if it breaks or something. There were the standard mine died a week later and mine got wet and don't buy this ever because I had this little problem with it and you will too. And
it doesn't work with Windows 98 SE.
Yeah, I just chose to ignore those because it looked like there were about the same percentage of them with others.
And, well, yeah, exactly. There's always that background noise. And
I tried to filter that out. And anyway, so I ended up ordering one. I'm happy so far. I'll report back a little bit later. But I had not considered before the difference between a music player for where you are not going to be sweaty or moving things around enough that you could break it easily.
Well, this comes back to our whole overarching discussion of how we look at technology is, you know, use what works for the situation that you're in.
Right.
And I mean, I guess in some cases, once you get into the iPhone range, you can start to go down that elitist path where it's like, well, everything's in iTunes, so I want it organized the way that iTunes is, so I've got to go with an i device. And it's kind of cool to come across a piece of technology that breaks away from that and does a very specific purpose, you know, gym use. So it'll be interesting to hear kind of long-term results of this.
Yeah, I understand you can actually use it with iTunes to some extent, too. I don't know how, because I just don't care.
Just drag a folder into it and eject, right?
Exactly. I want this. Pop, 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 pop. And I only have about a gig and a half on it now because I don't really need the 8 gig. But I, whatever.
Oh, no, you've only got a gig and a half of music to listen to at the gym? Oh, it's no.
Enough to get through a workout, that's for certain. So, anyway. And we do have calls this week.
Indeed we do.
Hey, guys. It's Photonuts from the board. My question has to do with long-term storage of data. I shoot about 4 terabytes worth of images every year. And every year I buy another 4 terabyte drive, hook it to my Macintosh, dump my year's worth of photos into it as I shoot through the year, and then put it off and put it in storage. And I have to say to myself, is there a better way to do this? That way I'm not continually buying 4 terabyte drives, especially since the cameras are getting, even that I use, are getting even higher and higher in resolution. So I may have to get, you know, I may need an 8 terabyte drive. Let me know. Thanks. Bye.
That is a tough question.
That's a very, very loaded question.
We've actually been thinking about this a lot.
There are so many different problems that you run into with this. I mean, first of all, talking about hard drives, I don't know, how do we want to go about this? I guess kind of step through the different media here.
Let me preface this by saying that, first of all, there is not an excellent answer. There's not a patent, straightforward answer for this. We don't have one. We're still looking. No one has one. Every media has a failure mode. And that failure mode is often measured not in decades, but in years. So we have to be kind of serious about all of these. And with that in mind, you're totally going the right way, Juan. Let me get out of the way.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about long term, we're talking about, like, you know,
forever,
more than 5 years.
Yeah, like,
you know, because within 5 years, and a lot of these different types of media are still going to be readable, still going to be in relatively good shape and probably okay. Starting with the example from the voicemail of hard drives, long term, that can actually be a bad thing. For a couple different reasons. First of all, is this kind of physical failure that happens when a hard drive is left inactive for too long.
Right.
I cannot remember the term of it. It's not thermal locking, but what it is basically the hard drive has a magnet in it that when you power it up, it spins up and obviously it's a motor, right? That turns the drive and causes you get the. No, the other magnets in the drive get the arm moving back and forth across the platter and read the data. What can happen is that I don't know if it's something to do with the bearings or something like that. What you can do is that these drives, if you let them sit for too long, they will literally lock into where they're sitting, where when you try to power them up, they've been inactive for so long that they just won't turn.
Yeah, there are a number of ways that a hard drive can fail. I've seen a couple, and I know you have, and everybody is.
Yeah.
It just, one is that the motor dies or anything happens that prevents it from turning. Second thing is that the electronics in them fail. The third thing is that the head is the motor that controls the positioning of the head in them fails. The next one is that the head itself fails. And the final one is, these are groupings, of course. There are lots of ways.
Yeah.
The final one is that the head itself comes into contact with or damages the disc surface.
Yeah, impact damage internally. And all of those mean that there are many, many failure points in doing hard drives as a long-term storage. And I mean, even just the idea of long-term storage of a hard drive, I mean, try to read a first-generation SCSI drive today.
Yeah, will you even have the interface in 10 years?
Do you have, know? Like, an MFM RLL drive from back in the day? I mean, man. Even IDE devices are getting hard to read because, you know, there's only one controller on many boards, and a lot of them, they don't even include that board, that controller. So it's getting harder and harder for, like, the technology will just advance. I mean, yeah. You know, if you have a SATA 1 drive, do you know if that will be compatible with, like, SATA 12 or whatever they come out with? Like, it's... This kind of leads into the next.
Well, before you leave that, one last thing I'd like to say that I think people need to hear, and this is a good place for it. Our audience, small though it may be, are really smart, and they tend to think about these things. And one thing that you need to kind of keep in mind, a lot of people watch CSI or something, and they realize that it's quite possible to recover data from hard drives. In fact,
yes,
it can be done in incredible situations. I mean, you find a piece of a wrecked space shuttle that includes part of a hard drive, and they can get data off it. Now, if you had one of those failure modes that doesn't involve physical damage of the drive itself, in a lot of cases, you can recover what's on there by taking the drive into a clean room, disassembling it, and reassembling it with functional parts, and then pulling the data off of it.
And yes, that's as expensive as it sounds.
Except I'm shocked at how many people don't realize that. Most people, when they get into freak out mode, which I'm not poking fun, I've done it too, everybody has, you've lost something really, really important, and you're upset. They go looking, thinking, I've got to get this back, I'll pay, you know? Yeah. Okay. I let me put it in perspective. One time I had an employer that I worked for when I was doing straight up IT work, and we had a drive file. You remember the Seagate Barracuda, the early SCSI drives?
Yeah.
We had one of those take a dump and lost quite a bit of data. And they were like, I don't care. You need to recover. I'm like, look, you know, this is very expensive. And they're like, you need to make this happen, whatever the cost. I'm like, no problem. So I called and I found a place that did it. I called the local law enforcement people and asked them, believe it or not. And they forwarded me to a place that did it. And we got on the line. And this is in like 1996. It would have cost us about $22,000 to have the drive disassembled. And that's assuming that it was a failure that would have worked with it, which it turns out it would have been because those were motor failures, you know. But holy crap, people, let me just be clear. You are not going to recover the data on a drive in all likelihood. Those things you see on CSI, you can't afford them. So I just wanted to say that. I know it sucks, but, you know, it's good to know because I think a lot of people base their decisions on the fact that, well, you know, it could be recoverable, and it's not.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, I worked long enough at a computer store in the tech department that I've sent, you know, families away crying because they've lost the only photos they have of a dead relative or something like that.
Right.
And like SpinRite couldn't recover the drive. It's just like a hard drive failure. It's like, well, you know, there is this place in Vancouver that can look at it for $2,000 to start.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't afford that. It's like, well, here's your dead drive. Thanks. Unfortunately. And literally I've had people walking away crying, which brings us back to, you know,
backup.
But we're talking about long time archives.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Now the other side of a hard drive failure is software problems. And we've already talked about that a little bit in terms of, you know, interface incompatibilities. You know, also different file formats. Like if you formatted a drive in, say, a certain version of NTFS, which is the Windows file format, is that going to be compatible down the line? In a lot of cases, there's a lot of Linux software backported to support very obscure different file formats. But you know, it gets harder and harder. The other problem that you have as well is if you have like one of these RAID or network attached storage boxes, or are using hardware RAID as a like an long-term storage. Now, what happens if A, that software fails, or B, the hardware fails? Now, if you have like software Linux RAID, if your hardware fails, then what you can do is you can go pop all the drives into another machine and do a run another Linux and recover the RAID. If it's a hardware device, like one of the, you know, one of the, you know, the Seagate or Nexstar storage arrays that are kind of like a standalone hardware RAID, software RAID solution.
Yeah, or like the Drobo.
Or the Drobo, right. I mean, you could buy another Drobo if they're around, but what happens when the Drobo hardware fails? The hard drives are still there, and you can't read them because they're in a proprietary format. Same goes if you make your own hardware RAID using like the onboard motherboard controller or like an Adaptec RAID controller. What happens if that controller fails? You're again back to square one with your data gone. So, you know, a lot of people that do in kind of corporate environments that do this would buy extra controllers and, you know, keep them spare with the machine just in case something were to happen. But, you know, that's not necessarily from a consumer standpoint or prosumer or small business. That's not necessarily what you can do. You can't have a separate set of hardware sitting aside. So, you know, I mean, we could talk all day about hard drives.
Only crazy people do. Oh, wait.
Well, yeah, we're insane. But then again, you know, that's the whole reason why we have this three-way different network setup for backing up data between our public servers and you and me. It's just, you know, we don't want to have to deal with that, right?
Well, I'll tell you though, I think back to Photonuts' question kind of straight up. Yep. I think that right now there is not a removable media solution that is any better than the drives. I think that when we've approached this problem, we've looked at it in terms of how long do we need to keep them? Like, for example, our podcast materials, we want to keep forever. So in the long term, our solution to that has been to actually RAID them with the intent of building that RAID larger and larger and backing it up as time goes on. I think that may switch to a hard drive storage solution like the one that you're talking about down the road. For things like, for me, video projects that I've done for class and things like that, I feel like I have about, we talked, Juan and I talked pretty extensively about this, and I feel like I have about a 5-year keep on those. And in cases like that, we've talked about going to Blu-ray for them because at 50 gig a pop, you know, for a couple, sometimes 4 or 5 or 10 Blu-rays, you can store a project. And the lifespan on a Blu-ray seems to be somewhere around that 5-year point, if not a little farther. You may get lucky. You may get longer than that. But really, once you hit that 5-year point, you've got to start imagining that imagine that it can happen, you know.
Well, yeah, and then that's the other thing, getting into burnable media, burnable DVDs or Blu-rays. If you look up the specs for the different types of media that you can buy, they have a shelf life, at which point the chemicals in them will start to break down, and literally the entire, I've seen it happen with old discs that I found, that the write material just separates from the plastic of the disc.
Yeah,
and it just degrades and it corrodes and it goes away. You can get archival quality burnable CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays. They'll cost a lot more and they'll last slightly longer.
So for us, you know, I think you know if you're looking at permanent storage, you don't need ready access to it. Like, it's something that you're going to keep. You're not going to look at all the time, but you need to be able to get at. I think the drive solution is the best solution right now, and I think. For two reasons. One is that the shelf life of the drive, especially, and if you do some research, there are actually things you can do to extend that as well in terms of firing them up every so often and checking them and so on.
And eventually starting to rotate them out
exactly.
as larger media becomes available.
That's what I was going to say, is that the second part of this is that because the access speed is reasonably high, it's not a gargantuan effort to transfer it to new media. If you had, say, been storing that 4 terabytes a year to Blu-ray, and you now have a house full of Blu-rays, a storage unit completely full of Blu-rays, and now you say, hey, I'm hitting the 5-year point and I want to get off those Blu-rays, that's a big job.
It is.
If, on the other hand, you had a 4 terabyte drive from, say, I don't know, let's say 2009, where you shot 4 terabytes of photos, and now you're like, I'm thinking that, it's 2015 now, and you're like, I think I'm we're at the new super interface, and I think this one's getting ready to phase out. These drives are a bit old. New drives are cheaper. I can buy 10 terabyte drives now. I'll just take 2009, 10, 11, and I'll just copy them onto a single new drive, and we'll move on. You can do that without it being gargantuan. So I tell me if you think I'm wrong here, Juan, but I think right now the drive storage solution is probably the best. I think you could theoretically.
I think so.
You might be able to.
You just have to be diligent with it, like you were saying there. I mean, if you archive it with the expectation that you never want to touch it again, then just assume that the data is gone.
Agreed. And, you might be able to save a little bit going the bare drive route and buying a storage solution of some kind. I know that they make storage cases for storing bare drives for this purpose because, there may be no reason to go buy an entire external with the interface and all that just for the purpose of putting it on a shelf,
Right.
But you do not want to just throw the bare drive on the shelf. Now, the funny thing is, you can get lucky, too. I have a bin where I literally pitch drives that I don't use. Like, I don't care what's on them. And a couple of times I've pulled one out of there, like a 250 gig or something, an IDE 250 gig that's I don't know how old, right? And just threw it in this box along loose with others. I'm not kidding. And then thought, hey, I need a system drive for an unimportant thing. Maybe I'll just throw this in and see what happens. And the data's still good on it, So yep. You might get lucky. You might not.
Yeah, that's the thing to consider. The other completely other side of this is the stuff that we've talked about before is cloud storage. That is definitely not viable for long-term storage. I mean, Think about it this way. I mean, how many of these cloud storage companies existed 5 years ago?
Yeah.
How many of them do you think will exist 5 years from now? I mean, I'm going to hope the ones that I've chosen for my parents and stuff, but that's not the only method of backup that I'm going to implement, and I'm certainly not going to do it for single long-term storage.
Exactly.
dot-com crashes 1.0 and 2.0. Have taught us that, these companies have very large aspirations of how they want to present their services. But when it comes down to it, they may not be able to deliver purely because, 2 years from now, the money might dry up. I mean, the economy is never a sure thing, and you never know the viability of a company like this. And eventually, they just either will A, lose your data, or B, go out of business. Assume that, hoping for better.
And even if it's like Amazon or Google, and they still are in business, this may not be their business priority. So,
well, exactly. I mean. Every couple of years, you hear about one of the big guys losing somebody's data. And it's like, well, it wasn't me this time. They were able to get my stuff restored from a backup. But what about the time it isn't? Yeah, what about the time it is you? It's always that kind of, even when you're doing long-term storage, you still got to, I would still, at some point you get diminishing returns. But you got to think of, nothing exists until it's in at least two places. And nothing's backed up until it's in three.
Agreed. We have a high class problem. We were going to do
It really is.
We were going to do like 3 or 4 listener calls, and we actually ran up a whole bonus episode on just the one thing that we were going to talk about in the call. So I think we're going to have to hold some of these for next week.
I agree. Yep. Well, we are always appreciating the voicemail calls. And as you can see, this time it wound up resulting in an entire episode from a really good idea submitted by a listener. So we love hearing from everybody. So keep them coming.
Thank you.
Yes. You're giving us ideas for keeping this thing going, right? Yay.
We'll see you next week. From everyone here at Modern Geek and GWC, thanks for listening. If you have something to add to the show, a news tip, feedback on anything we've discussed, or just some random awesomeness, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 214-296-9229. That's 214-296-9229, and follow the instructions there to leave us a message for inclusion in a future podcast. You'll find other GWC podcasts, as well as the friendliest people in geekdom, on the GWC website and forum at galacticwatercooler.com. And don't forget, financial support from listeners like you keep all GWC podcasts on the net each week. To find out how to donate, visit galacticwatercooler.com/donate.